Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's really great to be back among you. I get such a good vibe when I'm in this sanctuary. I think it's because all of you practice community as it's intended, and so I commend you for that. I'm battling a cataract in my left eye. I'm having it taken care of next month, but in the meantime, I have a little blurriness, so if you see me doing this, it's because I'm trying to see where I'm at in my talk. A couple weeks ago, one of my staff came to me and said, Judge Stevens wants to know if you're angry with him. I'm like, why? He says, he says you passed him at the grocery store and you barely acknowledged him. I'm like, well, I didn't realize it was him until he was like right there, and then it was just it was awkward. So I have to get this taken care of. So when Karen called, I thought, oh, good gracious, surely you don't want me to come back and speak again. But she assured me that you did. And so I began to think about a topic. And when I was at Messiah College many years ago, I remember thinking about the three R's: redemption, reconciliation, and restoration. And when I was here last, I spoke to you about reconciliation, so I thought, well, let's talk about restoration. And I had a working title in mind that seemed to fit nicely with your theme of journeying. I was going to call it The Road to Restoration. And just for kicks, I thought, well, I'll Google it and see what comes up. Well, I got 10,000 hits on sermons entitled The Road to Restoration. That won't do. So I rethought my ideas and thought, all right, let's do something around journeying. And I've always remembered Ralph Waldo Emerson's famous line that life is a journey and not a destination. So I thought, well, let's untangle that a bit and see if that's really the case. Now, really, I think I said in the bulletin that these would be the musings of a middle-aged man. My wife chuckled at that. She says, middle-aged, really? But these really are musings, and I'm going to wander a bit, as we do on journeys. But I do think we're going to land somewhere intentional. But that may not be until the end of our talk. So if you want to take a nap, the really good stuff comes at the very end. So now imagine, if you will, two people in a car traveling down the interstate, coming up on an interchange, and up overhead are those big green signs, directional signs, and one says, life is a journey, keep left. And the other says, life is a destination, exit 1 mile. Now picture those two people as my wife, Lynn, and myself, and we're both trying to wrest control of the steering wheel. Because I'm all about the journey and she's all about the destination. For her, the perfect vacation is going somewhere and parking ourselves, whether it be on the beach or a mountain retreat or Paris, although we haven't gotten there yet. But for me, it's getting in the car and getting on the road and seeing what we can see. Together, she and I have been to 36 states by car. And yes, I would make us go see the giant ball of twine or Grandpa's cheese barn. And if we were nearby, I would make us go to the Grand Canyon. I always thought that if I ever got to the Grand Canyon, I'd be like Chevy Chase. You know, he walked up in Vacation, the movie Vacation. He walks up and he goes, okay, let's go. Because I'm all about getting on the road and just seeing that next thing. So on the one hand, I want to see as many sights as I can, and that's what the journey has been for me. Life is this journey where, you know, it's filled with lessons and hardships, heartaches, joys, celebrations, special moments that we get to share with loved ones and friends. The road is not always smooth. We certainly have our challenges and our setbacks. But when our focus is on the destination, sometimes we're not living in the moment. And I so much want to live in the moment. We are not meant to rush through life, but to savor every moment. And for me, that's what it's about, learning all the lessons along the way. Life's journey, and I love this quote, life's journey is not to arrive at the grave safely in a well-preserved body, but rather to skid in sideways, totally worn out, shouting, woohoo, what a ride. And I think Keith Richards of the Rolling Stone is living up to this quite nicely. But why the difference? Why do some focus on the journey and others on the destination? Mark Twain once quipped that the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. So does it have something to do with our upbringing, whether you're a journey person or a destination person? Lynn's childhood was marked by a major move at age 5 from Texas to Gettysburg. Now, I imagine it's hard enough if you're from the South moving to the North or in the North moving to the South, but imagine a Texas family moving to all places, Gettysburg, where there are monuments enshrined about the conflict that occurred there. For me, on the other hand, I grew up in the same neighborhood all 18 years of my early life. Very steady, very constant. So perhaps that has impacted the way we view this. I remember a passage in one of my old philosophy books from college about a young man on a journey. And while he's on this path, he encounters an older man. And this older man says to him, "Modern neuroscience has proved that all of our actions and decisions are merely the machinations of a predetermined universe, and that our concept of free will is nothing but a comforting illusion." And in the next paragraph, the author says, if you agree with his hypothesis, turn to page 72. If you don't agree, turn to page 72. However, I digress. This debate on predestination versus free will is something we'll save for another day in case Karen calls me back. But where does this desire for wanderlust or putting down roots really come from? Could it be in our DNA? Lynn's family, once they got to Texas, stayed put. When I was visiting her grandparents, we went to Fields Chapel in Palestine, East Texas, and in the cemetery are many generations of ancestors. They clearly stayed put. My family, on the other hand, were quite the journeyers. All of the Harlins in the United States came from three brothers who came to this country in 1687. They were Quakers fleeing persecution in England. And they arrived in Newcastle, which at that time was in Pennsylvania. And in 1710, Ezekiel Harlan built the Kennett Meeting House in Kennett Square in Chester County. And from there, they moved on to Lancaster, the next generation Harrisburg, then up the river to Sealings Grove and Sunbury, subsequent generations to Williamsport, Muncie, over to Renova, Carlisle, and back to Harrisburg, which is where I grew up. And now here I am in Meadville, and my kids were born in Gettysburg and Lewistown. Now that's just my direct lineage. One of my favorite stories is of a Harlan, Silas Harlan, who back in 1846, he and his family and members of their party hitched their wagons to a wagon train setting out on the Oregon Trail. I think there were 500 wagons altogether. And the Harlan Young party was towards the back. And they were on their way to California. They had 6 months to get there before the winter snows. And they were the last family to get over the mountains. The two remaining families were the Donners and the Reeds. The Donner family tarried a bit and got behind. And they were about 11 days behind, I think, when they got to Wyoming. And in Wyoming, they learned about a cutoff that was supposed to be a shortcut. It was called the Hastings Cutoff. And it was to shave 350 miles off their journey. So instead of staying on the Oregon Trail and going over the Great Salt Lake and then down, they went underneath and crossed the Wasatch Mountains and then across the Great Salt Desert. And they actually lost 3 additional weeks. And so by the time they got to the Sierra Nevadas, and we're about to get over the pass, the snows came, and it snowed for 8 days straight, and that winter alone, they had 22 feet of snow. And of course, you know the story about the Donners. So are there any lessons to be learned from that tale? Well, yeah, don't tarry. Perhaps it's better to lead than follow. Shortcuts usually aren't. And as my mother would say, if it's too good to be true, then it's probably too good to be true. She was especially worried about me when I was 17 and going to the racetrack. And it was funny, you know, when you're 17, that's all very interesting. As soon as I turned 18, I had no more interest in betting on the horses. But we used to win a lot of money. And my mother would always say, If you go down that road, it could lead to bigger problems. But that was part of my journey. And journeys are in themselves anti-survival. Having direction really is the most important thing that we have. So even when my wife and I would vacation, and I would want to see that giant ball of twine, we were going someplace. We had some destination in mind. For me, I wanted it to be a series of destinations. But think about it. Would we have ever landed on the moon if we got into the spaceship and thought, it's all about the journey, not the destination? Probably wouldn't have made it. So by all means, relax, travel, enjoy the moment, but do so with a destination in mind. Or think of it this way. If life is all about the journey, then our luggage is all about the destination. Now, back to the Donners. Of the 87 people in the Donner and Reed families that tried to get over the pass, only 48 survived. So what must have it looked like for the survivors as they came down off the mountains into Sutter's Mill and then into the Central Valley of California? The surviving Donner children were orphaned, and so other families had to take them in. All of them were, of course, traumatized. All of them had faced severe starvation, frostbite, and of course, they had to live with the stigma of how they survived. So when life comes at you hard, and I think the story of Ruby fits nicely with this. When life comes at you hard, how do you keep it from defeating you and defining you? I will restore you to health and heal your wounds, declares the Lord in Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 17. I will restore you to health and heal your wounds. Well, that could be the mission of the Tamarack, Carol, right? It's certainly the mission of Women's Services. We will provide hope and resources to those affected by violence. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like, I will restore you to health and heal your wounds? So saith Women's Services. We will provide you with hope and resources. This concept of restoration really provides a foundation for all people who have suffered. It is this process of bringing something or someone back to its original state. That was certainly the goal or the mission, I think, for those that survived their long journey across the United States. And I've been thinking a lot of late about the treatment of women by the hands of men and the treatment of our planet by humanity. So much of what has led to the destruction of our planet has been driven by the same sense of entitlement, abuse of power, objectification, disrespect, and exploitation. All of the planetary abuse that we have done to this planet has now led to disruptions in our climate. And who suffers the most from pollution and exploitation, food insecurity, and climate change? It's women and girls. So ironically, the more damage we do to the planet and the more disruptions there is to climate, the more harm that is done to women and girls. In those situations where there are great displacements of people, there tends to be more human trafficking. Girls are forced to marry prematurely. It's the women and the girls who are responsible for gathering food and providing for families. And if they're facing it, food insecurity or pollution, it becomes all the more difficult. These crimes against the earth become crimes against humanity. So I've been thinking a lot about how we treat women and the relationship that we have to our planet. So I want to close with a story about a father who worked very hard, and he had a very energetic son. And when the father would come home, the son would expect him to have this mandatory playtime. And on a particular Friday, the father was feeling rather weary and tired, and he just wanted to get home and curl up in the couch and read the newspaper and await dinner. But he knew that his son was going to be expecting some sort of playtime. And so he remembers seeing the newspaper that morning, and on the front page was a picture of the world, the planet, from a distance, from a satellite. And so he cut that into small pieces like you would a jigsaw puzzle. And when he got home, he gave the pieces to his son and said, here, see if you can't put this together. And he thought to himself, surely this will take a half hour so that I have a chance to read the paper. But within the space of a few minutes, his son returned with the picture assembled, and it was taped from behind. The father, being surprised, asked the son how he was able to assemble the picture so quickly. Well, you see, Dad, the son explained, on the back is a picture of a woman. So I put the woman together on the back, and when I turned it over, the earth was complete. I thought, well, isn't that a great metaphor, right? When we take care of women and girls, our planet is taken care of as well. I will restore you to health and heal your wounds. That really is both the journey and the destination, is it not? I couldn't be more pleased that Carol brought Ruby here today, because the story of Ruby and her healing and her health and restoring her to health is really the story of what a community is all about. It's taking care of one another, hearing the concerns, the joys, the sorrows from fellow congregants, praying and being a source of comfort is what community means. It means to me, and I think means to all of you. We have some trying days ahead of us. I thought for sure when I came in here today there were two things I was not going to talk about, and that was the election or the coronavirus. But we certainly have challenges ahead of us, and it's all the more important that during these tough times, these challenges ahead, that we rely on each other and that we practice community as we know we should. So thank you, and peace be with you.